Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi barakatuh. This is Hamza Foy with the Hia 502 podcast. In this episode of Reading Between the Lines, Mishkat and I will actually be reviewing a hit miniseries currently on HBO titled Chernobyl. In this miniseries, you'll find a dramatic retelling of the events leading up to and the aftermath of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant meltdown in the late 1900s. Before we dive into this discussion, I do want to preface and make clear to viewers who wish to watch Chernobyl, there is one scene of nudity, only a few minutes long, in the third or fourth episode. The scene depicts Russian miners who are mining without clothing, removing radioactive waste from the Chernobyl site. The show will explain why they did that. You'll be able to skip over. It's only a few minutes long, and it has no importance to the show. I just want to make this clear. If you do decide to watch Chernobyl, I highly recommend this miniseries. It's not melodramatic. It's sincere with historical authenticity, and the actors and actresses in this miniseries do an incredible job. So without further ado, here is our review of Chernobyl on HBO. Mishkat and I are here. We are discussing the Chernobyl miniseries on HBO. This miniseries is recounting the incident in the Soviet Union in the late 1900s, where they had a nuclear power plant meltdown in modern-day Ukraine. Just to start, I have to say that in terms of videography, this miniseries did an incredible job. They have a whole host of great actors and actresses, but the videography is like what drew me in, throughout the episodes. One scene in particular, I don't want to, spoil too much, but one scene in particular that I remember is the end of, I believe it was the second episode, where there was a group of like Russian engineers that had to like dress up in, this equipment, because they were going down. Remember, they had to like open one of like, they called it a sluice gate. They were trying to let water out.
Oh. I think that was a little bit later in the show. But yeah.
Like that scene, because it's towards the end of that episode. So, they're going down, deeper into the nuclear site, and, they've got all their heavy equipment on, and the videography, they're picking up like the heavy breathing. And it's like the heavy breathing kind of merges with like the increasing, what were they calling them, decimeters?
They were calling them decimeters. Essentially, they're Geiger counters. Mm-hmm. So they make like that. It's an extremely sharp, mm-hmm. in your burrowing in your brain kind of a clicking noise.
Yeah.
It would increase so the deeper they went into the underground of the reactor, obviously the more radiation, the closer they got to right underneath the core.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about, but
that scene, like, because I hate to say it, I've seen like my fair share of like horror movies, and it's usually horror movies like jump scares and gore, and it's like, I have to say this scene though was probably like one of the scariest, because it's just like,
there's nothing more horrific than reality.
Mm-hmm.
People would like to make up the paranormal, and they like to, make up the psychological thrillers. There's nothing more scary than normal life.
Yeah.
So that was reality for them, the three men that went down there,
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was very ominous. It was just,
exactly.
And their flashlights went out, so they were in pitch black.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Were there any scenes that kind of stuck out to you?
For me, I think the biggest sequence was when they were actually showing all the radiation pouring off of the thing, off of the core that was now exposed. Just like it's almost this impenetrable black cloud of just death. Yeah. That's what it was, death. So that was a big scene. I think my favorite part of the whole show wasn't anything like dramatic like that. It was just when they were in, I guess you'd call it a courtroom.
Yeah.
Like the equivalent of a Russian courtroom. And they were explaining, you know, exactly what went wrong, because of course government, they're not nuclear scientists. So just like he had, you know, the lead actor had his little cards that would tell you, like, this added to the reaction, this took away from the reaction, this is how things got out of balance. So I thought that that was a really clever way to... I love that. I think that was probably my favorite, which is why we watched this show twice, right? So the second time, I know you were kind of like, well, we can just kind of stop it here, because the last episode is just, you know, just basically that. And I was like, no, that's what I want to watch. Yeah.
No, that, yeah, that's that scene, because... That's the thing is, I mean, obviously, like, you know, none of us are, you know, nuclear physicists or anything like that. So it was like that scene alone. And once again, it's not like bringing you up to like PhD level, like this is how basic. You understood what happened in Chernobyl. But it was incredible in kind of breaking it down, like, you know, what had happened and just the science behind it. Kind of segueing away from like the videography, the overall story I found very interesting, because in our previous episode we were talking about that Dan Carlin book, and he kind of goes into, you know, the start of the atomic age, you know, the you know, bombing of like Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This was it was an event that was like during peacetime. You know, there wasn't like sabotage, it wasn't bombs dropping, it was just
it was an accident. Well, it was
ineptitude,
negligence, ego. But it was not meant to be malicious.
And it's like, even during peacetime, this atomic technology, you know, it's always going to be that kind of, you know, double-edged sword. You know, because it's like, okay, you know, we can use it for good, but even if we're using it for good, because once again, this power plant's generating electricity, even then it's like something can go awry and it affects so many people.
Well, it's ironic because the whole accident happened because of the fact that they still needed it to generate the electricity. So in the beginning, if you recall, so the reason why this whole meltdown happened, besides, you know, the negligence and the ineptitude, was they wanted to run a test on this reactor, right? So in order to run the test and how it would keep going on backup power, essentially, they had to take the power down to a certain level. Well, there was... So the reactor was actually powering a town. And so the town called up and said, look, you can't take the power down anymore. We have to meet our production quotas, you know, because they were an industrial town. So the town said, don't take it down anymore. Wait. And so that waiting of the 10 hours from when the test was scheduled to start was set in motion. They waited the 10 hours because the town needed electricity. And the shift changed so that the new people that came onto the shift didn't have any idea. Like, that's the reason for the accident, is because the town still needed energy. So you're always going to have this sword hanging over your head of, well, we really need this, but it's also going to ultimately destroy us. I mean, I truly believe there's not going to be any scenario where eventually, even with the most perfect nuclear technology, you're still going to have accidents. Have that risk, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there was that aspect that kind of, you know, gravitated me to this miniseries. But it was also the aspect, and once again, I know this part of the show, perhaps certain people kind of frowned upon it, because it was commenting on kind of the state of like the Soviet Union, in particular the fact that, you know, you have people in positions who they have no merit being there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, because I remember in particular there's like one character who was like in the power plant, and he was interviewed by one of the physicists after the accident. So he's in the hospital, he's about to die. And she's like, you're a senior, you know, nuclear engineer or mm-hmm. whatever the title was.
But essentially the equivalent of a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm 25.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when they were doing the flashbacks leading up to the meltdown, you know, he was definitely coming off as like, I'm in over my head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm doing. And that interested... That definitely like interested me, where it's like, you know, you had, you know, these kind of systems of government where it's like you were putting people in positions where it's like, I hate to say it, but you're not qualified. You know, you don't merit the position. Mm-hmm. There was also that scene, the same physicist, the lady, what was her name? Olena Komyuk.
Yes.
She was meeting with like one of the like party secretaries in the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically just kind of, you know, tongue in cheek talking down to her, because she's very qualified dealing with what she's dealing with. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, I think he was remarking like, you know, I was a shoe cobbler before I got my position.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And it was that, you know, it was that unfortunate, like, you know, I am the little guy, and look at me, I'm over you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I know this is kind of a, you know, touchy topic, but it's like, you know, in certain instances, it's like, I hate to say it, but you need like the more qualified person to be in charge. You need, you know, the person with more education, that sort of thing to...
It's not even that. I mean, yes, at a higher level, that's what you look for.
Mm-hmm.
At a basic level, you look for someone who actually cares about people.
Mm.
And so, you know, the town of Pripyat, which mm. was the adjacent town, basically where the reactor was.
Mm.
So the people who worked in the reactor lived in that town. This was like quite a few people. It wasn't just, you know, 30 people. Yeah. I think it was like a shift of hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
So they all lived in the town with their families, and the exclusion zone, i.e. the zone that's, you know, affected by the radiation of all that, it's quite large.
Yeah.
And so that zone was not evacuated until, what, 9-10 days after?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's when, or maybe more, I don't know, that's when the order was given.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want... They didn't want to look bad.
Yeah.
They didn't want to look bad to their own people. They didn't want to look bad to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So at a basic level, when you have a system that cares more about the Soviet image versus...
Yeah.
I know that's a controversial topic. We won't get into that. But yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, that's what happened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting, like at the end of the show, when you watch the last episode, there's, you know, real life. So this is based on a real life event. There's real life statistics.
Mm.
And according to Russia, the number of people who died either due to the explosion or directly thereafter from burns sustained or injuries sustained during the explosion, and then the radiation that was emitted, their number was 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like the UN and the WHO and all these global organizations are saying, well, it's upwards of 4,000. It could be as high as 90,000.
Mm-hmm.
So... That's a huge disconnect right there.
Yeah. And that's you know, I think they did a good job helping the audience explore just how serious, like, this atomic energy is. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, you had the explosion. Yeah, people died from that explosion.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you had, like, the... Because they were showing, like, the fire engines, the fire, you know, and company coming in, cleaning that up. Okay, they're screwed, mm-hmm. unfortunately. A lot of them died because they had direct contact with, you know, like the graphite from the core and stuff that was giving out that radiation. And then, like you explained, you know, Gorbachev in the movie and, you know, the Communist Party, they were so concerned about, you know, we don't want to look bad to the West. So they didn't tell the residents around the plant that this thing is emitting a lot of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're worried about our, you know, image before these people. So once again, those people are affected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and prior to atomic energy, we didn't really have technology that could do that.
Right.
You know, that could harm people on such a widespread, but also like an invisible scale, because it's not like you're seeing the radiation, mm-hmm. you know, out and about. I think they did a fantastic job in kind of, you know, breaking that down. There was that, and then the fourth episode where they had to, you know, kind of clear out that exclusion zone. So, mm-hmm. you know, we don't want to get into too much and kind of spoil the plot, but the fourth episode, it kind of shows a young boy who enlists in the Soviet Army, and his unit's responsible for basically clearing out all living things. Mm-hmm. So they were moving people out, but the animals they were putting down, because they were worried that, you know, they may step out of the exclusion zone, they may, mm-hmm. you know, spread this radiation. And I have to say that episode, the fourth episode, is probably like the most heart-wrenching for me.
Really? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Usually it would be, because I love animals. I don't know. For me, I don't think that was the episode. I it's hard for me. I think the episode that was probably like the most, you know, oh my goodness, was, it was, I think it was either like the very first episode or, yeah, I think it was the first one where, so the explosion happened and it was in the middle of the night. And you could see, so apparently, according to this show, I don't know if this is real or not, when a nuclear explosion like that happens, there's like a ray of blue light, and then you see like the smoke and the debris and the cloud, you know, of radiation. And so the townspeople could see this explosion from where they were. And so, you know, it's a spectacle, right? Oh, look, the fire engines are going. You know, it's like any other fire to them. They don't know any better because they haven't been told anything. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's too early at that time to even, you know, comprehend what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all standing at this bridge and they're watching the explosion. And so eventually with the wind and the air and everything, that radiation, that radioactive ash essentially starts raining down on them. And so at the end of the show, you find out that everybody who stood on that bridge died.
Yeah.
So I think that was probably one of the...
The
it's called the Bridge of Sadness or something. It's got a really sad name, too. Mm. It still exists to the day.
Mm. And I know we were talking, I think, between watching the show, because we watched it twice. You were commenting how prior to this miniseries, usually, you know, any sort of literature or any sort of show that deals with Chernobyl, unfortunately, it's, you know, the supernatural, like, oh, you know, you got mutants popping out, and you know, it's all the kind of horror genre,
which is unfortunate, because I mean, there's so much to be learned from, you know, things like this. And I mean, it's true. Radiation does cause mutations, right? Yeah. Radiation is harmful. That's why, you know, unfortunately, cancer patients who go through radiation are so, so weakened. It's because radiation does attack your cells. And that's the goal, is you want to attack the cancer cells, but in the process, you could actually create more cellular mutations.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be like, oh, this dog was a dog. Now it has three heads. That's not going to happen. But I have not seen the Chernobyl Diaries or the Chernobyl. I think Chernobyl Diaries is the horror movie that's out about it. I've not seen that. I've seen like parts of it. It it just makes no sense. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it definitely, like, belittles, like, the gravity of the situation. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I've always felt this way, but, you know, this miniseries definitely, you know, increased, like, my support, for example, for, like, the nuclear, you know, was it, where they're trying to reduce, like, the number of nuclear arms. Is that, like, nuclear proliferation, or anti-proliferation?
Yes, anti-proliferation, yeah. Yes.
You know, after watching this miniseries, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, more inclined to say, like, I would definitely, and I get it, some people may say that's a pipe dream, Hamza, but, you know, reducing the number of, you know, atomic armaments, you know, having these treaties where it's like, okay, halt production, because once again, I mean, you know, people don't understand, like, Chernobyl is not like, you know, Nagasaki and Hiroshima. This happened peacetime, you know, there isn't, like, malicious intent, and it's like, this could potentially happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, for me, it's like, I'd rather us kind of bury this back in Pandora's box. Let's, you know, let's not deal with nuclear energy.
Well, I mean, we had another nuclear disaster. A lot of people don't know about it because Chernobyl always takes the cake because it's the most popular. But it was like the Fukushima nuclear disaster happened in 2011.
Yeah.
Extremely recent, very modern times, you know. So the beast is always there. And the thing is, it's so very difficult to clean up from that. Right, because you can have all the contingencies of not letting the disaster happen, but very, very little can be done in this case specifically for nuclear disasters, because you're just, there's no way to minimize the loss of life, not without disrupting daily lives of people, you know, who might be anywhere near where these nuclear installations are. I mean, that's the thing. And so while I agree, definitely halt nuclear production, how do you get rid of what you already have?
True.
Because, yes, you can store it underground. Eventually, you might have an earthquake. You might have, I don't know, something that opens up a little crack and all of a sudden you've got all this magma coming up that superheats and I don't know, I'm not a nuclear physicist, but something can happen where those warheads or those missiles, whatever it is that are stored however many hundreds of feet under the ground, could go off. And it's like, you at this point, there's no turning back. So yeah, stop, halt the production, but what do you do with what you already have? Because there's no place to, unless you want to irradiate space even more, which would be unfortunate because people are trying to, you know, live in space. That's a goal of humanity, apparently, is to be able to colonize Mars and beyond.
Yeah.
So where do you take what you already have and store it safely, but also to where if something were happen to it, no, very few people would be affected. There's no part of the world to do that.
Yeah.
Because the world is so interconnected. I mean, you detonate it in the ocean, all seven seas are irradiated.
Yeah, yeah.
So where do you take it? I mean, even in space, eventually, it could probably come back in our atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. That was the other thing was, you know, after the meltdown, I mean, they didn't go into, like, an incredible amount of detail, but they did describe, like, some of the measures that the Soviet Union took to try to mitigate the disaster. What was it? They had to pour boron. It was boron and sand.
Mm-hmm. To stop, like, the emission of the radiation cloud that was continuously pouring out at a devastating rate.
And then
they
put the boron in sand. That ended up superheating, right?
That ended up, yeah. So it insulated what was already burning because the fires were still burning inside the core. Nobody could get into the core because you literally died. So nobody could get in to put out those fires. So you put boron and sand over it, you insulated that heat. So now it's got no place to go but down.
Yep. So it was melting through the ground. Or the, you know, that factory foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was that third or fourth episode. That's when they had to bring in the miners because they had to dig. It wasn't radioactive material. They had to like basically dig underneath the foundation because mm-hmm. they were worried that radiation would seep into the groundwater right. if it basically burrowed deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
So they dug under the site.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was it? They put in like liquid nitrogen?
Yeah, they put in liquid nitrogen, mm-hmm. All of the liquid nitrogen apparently yeah. in the Soviet Union at the time. So there was a concrete pad already under the foundation. Mm-hmm. They estimated that within like 2 days that super thermal material was going to burn even through a concrete pad. So just yep. think about how hot this is. So you need liquid nitrogen to cool down whatever gets down to where it doesn't get to the groundwater in the mm-hmm. first place and you know, start melting into that.
Yeah. And they also, you know, the people that had died dealing with, you know, for example, the initial fires, the people that, you know, the engineers, the firefighters, you know, they were putting them into what, like the lead thing. It was like lead-lined
coffins. Yeah, mm-hmm. they were lead-lined, very heavy.
Burying them in the ground. And then, because I looked it up, they were filling that. It wasn't just concrete, it was zinc.
I thought so.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's like, they this show definitely went into, you know, a lot of, like, detail. And it's like, looking, you know, adding all that detail up, it's like this, once again, you know, if we could somehow put this back into Pandora's box, you know, atomic energy, it's like, mm-hmm. we'll probably be better for it. Was there anything in the show that you thought was, you know, they could have improved on, or?
I think they could have improved on the true effects of the radiation.
Mm.
But, I mean, again, this is a mini series, so you have only so much time.
Yeah.
So what they showed mostly in the show was the extreme severe cases of the people who were right there.
Yeah.
You know, so they showed the firefighters mm. who were initially called in to stop the blazes that they could. They showed a few of the people who actually worked in the plant. But I think they could have done a little bit more in showing, like, the actual effects of the radiation on the general population.
Mm.
That, and the other thing was, so the way that the show is laid out, it's not very, like, linear, like, first this yeah. happened, then this happened, then this happened. So I think to the viewer, it's kind of jarring to go back and forth. I think they could have, the sequences leading up to the explosion, yeah. they're not really explained until the end, which is fine. But you could still, like, show it without explaining it. Because just because I see, you know, a few numbers going up and down, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But still, I have that in my head that it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they showed a little bit. I'm not saying they didn't show at all. They showed a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't get that knowledge until after.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I think the coolest part of, you know, and this is, like, maybe my tech nerd geeking out. I don't know. So they show you the reactor, the cores, right? The cores, which are made of whatever radioactive, whatever fissionable materials they're using, they're pointing downwards, essentially. There's a ceiling on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagine like a circular checkerboard, basically. I don't want to give away too much, but I yeah. thought that was the coolest part, is when all the fuel rods started bouncing up and down yeah. on this giant grid. And you could see, like, each grid corresponded, each rod corresponded to a position on the grid. And, like, the whole ceiling just bubbles up and poof, there it goes.
Mm. I remember, yeah.
That part I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. They do show the fire. Mm-hmm. They do show the explosion. Later, they show the explosion. But
nice. Who is your favorite character? And you can have multiple, but, like, one or two of them.
I really liked, you know, obviously you've got your main character, who was Valery Legasov.
Mm-hmm.
He was the nuclear physicist brought in to kind of look at what to do. So he's the obvious choice. I really like Sherbina.
Oh, yeah.
He was I forget what his what his position was, but he was right up there with Gorbachev, like his right-hand man or second-in-command or something. So he was sent as the government authority to Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And he goes from this, you know, I am a countryman, you know, the Soviet Union can do no wrong. You are just here to, you know, shut your mouth. And and he went from that to this, like, really, you know, the human came out in him.
Yeah.
The human came out in him, which was nice. So I would say Sherbino was probably my favorite character. How about you?
Sherbina is definitely, I would even put him over Legasov.
Mm-hmm.
What you explained is the reason why I like Sherbina. In a way he was kind of like, he was that character that was contrasting, like, you know, more like educated meritocracy against, you know, like utter like state loyalty, where it's like, you know, you can't question the state, you can't put anybody above the state. And then, like you said, he eventually, you know, because that's the thing, he's walking into a situation where he's like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I am not qualified. I'm not educated in this. I'm walking blindly. Now, of course, yeah, his ego in the beginning of the movie kind of, you know, kept putting him over Legasov, although Legasov's obviously, he's qualified. He knows what's going on. But he's also like that representative where it's like he's representing that whole like mindset where it's like, you know what? I'm going to get this done no matter what. Because, I mean, eventually he starts caving into Legasov and, you know, learning more about how do these power plants work? Mm-hmm. What's going on? You know, what's the science behind this? And, like, he's like, you know what? Whatever you need, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, forget my ego, forget state loyalties. Because there was that scene where... there was like multiple like rooftops that they had to clear of like the graphite, which was emitting the radiation. It was, I think it was like the highest platform. They couldn't actually put people on. Well, initially they were like, we don't want to put any human beings on here because like they're dead on site. So, you know, they had to turn to robotics. And even he sacrificed that whole sense of, you know, the Soviet Union does no wrong, because he's like, right, let's start talking to the West. We need to get more advanced, you know, robots on that rooftop to clear it. Eventually, though, they did have to rely on, you know, manpower. And now that scene where it's like, you know, I ring this bell, you got 90 seconds. Shovel this stuff over. Don't look over the edge. Get back in.
Right.
And that was that, and the divers that had to go in, open the sluice gate. You know, those two scenes were very good at that, you know, ominous, you know, foreboding sense. So Sherbina, yeah, he's my favorite. I like Homyuk as well. I would say she's my second favorite character.
So, and that's funny because she's not really...
Exactly. She's not. She's the one character. So they'll explain this at the end of the miniseries, but Homyuk, they made up Homyuk to represent the number of like scientists who helped Legasov. But she was like that like irreversible like patron of truth. She was telling Legasov, like, come clean, don't lie. It doesn't matter if the KGB is going after you. Doesn't matter if, you know, you're embarrassing the state. We have to come clean. Because without spoiling too much, one of the reasons the meltdown occurred was the KGB basically was concealing a fault in the design of the power plant. And they had concealed that for like decades. And so she eventually uncovers it, and she goes to Legasov, and she's like, you got to tell the truth. Even if it means your life, tell the truth. because her concern was if it's not addressed,
they had more.
If you don't pull the wool from under the person's eyes or over the person's eyes, then there may be multiple accidents to come, because mm-hmm. they had multiple of these types of reactors.
Yes, that wasn't the only reactor. In fact, that wasn't the only reactor in the, essentially in the plant that they, that, you know, they had built. There were four, I believe, cores.
Yeah.
Where the energy was being generated. So reactor four was the one that exploded.
Yeah.
What was, like, your favorite, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say, but... Mm-hmm. Thematically, abstractly, what was your favorite part of the show? You know, nothing tangible, not the videography, the acting.
So one of my favorite themes in the show, and they definitely dive into it towards the last episode, is, you know, because Lagasso, like, one of his, you know, most memorable lies is, like, what is the cost of lies?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, because they deal with that very real, you know, issue of, you know, whether you should be truthful or whether there's exceptions for lying. And it's like, you know, the show basically explains that it's like, you know, If you're gonna choose to lie, if you're gonna choose to conceal the truth, then inevitably there's gonna be consequences,
mm-hmm.
and you have to be very realistic about those consequences. I would say that theme, and they do a good job of this, because, I mean, you know, there's always been that kind of, you know, uncomfortable, you know, positioning of, like, the Soviet Union versus the West. I don't think they, you know, get too into that whole dimension. Like, it doesn't come off as, like, patriotically anti-Soviet or anti-communist. It's just, it's dealing with very real issues where it's like, okay, you know, it's better to be truthful. Yeah, there may be consequences, but those consequences are going to be better than if you choose to lie, if you choose to conceal the truth. Because oftentimes that's the thing. People choose to lie because it's like, I think I can avoid the consequences.
It's more convenient at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say that's probably my favorite theme.
I think for me, the best part about the show was there was no good to be had. There was not, so, you know, I think especially, like, in our era when we watch things, it's like, where's the happy ending? Where's the silver line? There was none. You cannot. In the aftermath, in the loss of life, the loss of land, the loss of natural resources, the risk of it happening again, just the lessons learned, there was just absolutely nothing good to be had.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds odd, but I think we're very used to the, well, this is the good thing. And it's like, no. Yeah, and there were positive things that came out of it, but it will never, you know, make up for all the negatives.
Yeah. That's very interesting that you bring that up, because I also noticed that as well. I think, not to get too critical, but I do think in some of our modern media, we always like to, like you said, kind of like add that silver lining or that light at the end of the tunnel. It's like, you could do all this bad, but, you know, you may be a good person at the end of it, or there's redemption. It's like, in this case, it's like, I hate to tell you,
what do you redeem?
Exactly.
What do you redeem? And if you do redeem, because they did try to pin the blame on one person, which was the person who was supposed to be running the test in the middle of the night.
Dyatlov.
Yeah. Dyatlov. And what do you get by imprisoning him? Nothing.
Yeah.
There's literally, like I said, no good to be had. Yeah. You know? So, yeah.
Who is your most hated character?
My most hated character? Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I mean, the obvious one again would be Dyatlov, right? Yeah. Because his ego just, the whole time I was like, you just need to shut up and sit down. But, I mean, he's the obvious choice. He was the curly haired guy with a really weird voice.
The weird accent like this.
Oh. So he was one of the people who was also on trial with Dyatlov because he was above several steps above. He was basically in charge of that reactor.
Yeah.
His name was Ho.
Oh man.
Hang on, we're gonna figure this out. I know his name started with a KH. Oh no, it didn't. It was Brukhanov.
Brukhanov, yeah.
Brukhanov, yeah. Yes, yeah. Viktor Brukhanov. He was essentially the government liaison between the reactor and, you know, the officials.
Yeah.
So I think I might have to do with the way he spoke and his voice, which, do it again. Can you do it again?
Minister, he had like the raspy voice, I guess, you know, he was like, you know, a smoker or something.
I know, maybe he smoked too much. Oh, that was the other thing in the show. So much smoking, everybody smoked. But I think he was probably like my least favorite character.
You want me to try his voice again?
Yeah.
Minister, everything's okay with this reactor. Dyatlov, he messed up, but everything's under control.
He's exactly like that. And I feel bad if that's like the actor's actual voice. I'm so sorry. But I don't know. Part of me disliked him just because I was like, why are you here?
Yeah.
This is not the place for you.
And see, that's the thing is, like, you know, we watched it twice, and I had to kind of think. First time watching it, yeah, Dyatlov was like the devil.
Oh, yeah.
But then, like, watching it again, because that's the thing is, at the end of the day, it was the deficiency in the reactor. Mm-hmm. And it's like I started to feel less bad for Dyatlov, and I started to despise Brukhanov more, because Brukhanov is like, he was Sherbina, but without actually taking action and rectifying the issue.
Oh, the denial. Mm-hmm. The denial. Because you spend almost two episodes even trying to convince people that the reactor, the core, is exposed.
Yeah.
People don't even believe. They just think, oh, it's a fire. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not radiation. This giant cloud that we all see, it's not radiation. How can it be radiation? Yeah. The reactors that we have, they're called RBMK reactors. They do not explode. They cannot. There is no situation wherein these reactors can possibly explode. Mm-hmm. So you spend so much time. You sacrifice one particular life that they sent up to the roof at gunpoint just to come back and tell them, it's exposed, it's I looked right at it, it's the core, it's all the nuclear stuff, it's out in the open. So I think that's the reason why I really disliked him, is just it was utter denial until his end. Yeah. Which
I'll get into who's actually my most hated character, but that scene that you described where they force the engineer at gunpoint to go up to one of the platforms and look over, like, you know, you the roof is ripped open, you know, you've got all the ash and the smoke just spitting out. That scene was most memorable because he's literally walking. He knows what he's going to see. Mm-hmm. Because he's the one that was trying to persuade them, like, the situation's terrible.
It's done, yeah.
And so that scene where he looks over the edge and he just kind of, like, looks back with, like, just the greatest amount of, like, forlorn in his face, where he's just like, we are in over our heads. This situation is terrible. But it's like, that expression, it just kind of shows he's like, still trying to persuade them.
Well, and also it's like, well, I just looked over. I just died. Yeah. Basically, like, I died right now. You know, in his mind, with the radiation that he was exposed to, he's like, oh, here's my death. Yeah. Like, he looked over at his death. That's what it was.
The character that I hated the most, it's a tie. So the first character, and this was first or second episode, it was the like the old like communist chairman. he played, for those who've watched Game of Thrones, he was the Maester Luwin.
Maester Luwin. He was such a good guy in Game of Thrones. That's very hard to come by.
And in this series, just the propaganda that just spewed out of his mouth. This was the one part of the show where I do think that. And once again, if you are somebody who has issue with, like, you know, the communism, this was a guy that was spewing that very pro-communist propaganda. We are the workers who built the state, and, you know, the people should not question the state. Ugh. It's tied between him and Charkov, the KGB chairman.
Oh, yeah.
Him? After the second time we watched, he's the devil.
I would agree. I mean, yes, because of the heinousness of what they did and said in such a short amount of time. But that's the thing. Like, for me, like, they didn't have enough screen time.
True.
For that, you know, like, they were just these side characters. Which, again, it just goes to show you, like, even if you're just this auxiliary bystander, like, you have such a big effect.
Yeah.
And that the character that you were describing, the chairman. Mm-hmm. Played by the same actor as Maester Luwin, that really breaks my heart.
Yeah.
You listen to him and you cringe, but it's like.
It's blind denial.
Yeah, it's just propaganda, and it's just. Oh gosh, I don't know how people close their eyes to reality like that. Yeah. It has to be a horrible reality. That's what I keep saying. Nothing is more horrific than reality.
Mm-hmm. All right, any. Closing remarks or thoughts?
No, I think we've gone through our allotted time for this one.
All right, so definitely recommend Chernobyl. It's on HBO. It's a miniseries. I think it's 5 episodes. It's recalling, and it is a dramatic retelling of the events concerning the Chernobyl nuclear power plant meltdown that occurred in the late 1900s. It occurred during Gorbachev's leadership, and I think that was towards like the end of the Soviet Union before you had the Russian Federation. Highly recommend. It's not... And I want to make this clear before we end. This is not a documentary. This is, you know, it's that.
It's a dramatization. Drama. Mm-hmm. Yes,
exactly.
There are actors who are acting the parts of real historical people based on a true story. That's what it is.
So definitely recommend it. Thank you for listening. Jazakallah khairan. Salaam alaikum. At the end of every Reading Between the Line episode, I do want to close with a book recommendation for community members. The book that I'm recommending in this episode is titled With the Heart and Mind, The Moral and Emotional Intelligence of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam by Imam Mikail Ahmed Smith. This brother, he does a wonderful job talking about emotional IQ, what's typically shortened as EQ, and discusses how the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam would be very mindful and very aware of how he chose to speak, how he chose to interact with people, depending on the different situations that our beloved prophet encountered. Mikail Ahmed Smith, he's a wonderful African-American scholar. He actually came to Louisville, I believe it's been two, 3 years ago. Gave a wonderful discussion with folks at the River Road Masjid. I remember being there. He was very eloquent while also being, once again, mindful of the kind of vocabulary he used, the tone he took with people. And really, this book, I don't think we give it due justice, how we think about the way we talk to people, the way we connect with people, you know, be that the you know, more disconnected nature of our existence nowadays in modern times, whether you want to pin that on, you know, the advent of social media or other technology. But there is a lot to be said about actually disciplining ourselves in how we speak to others. You know, do we think about how our words will be received by other people? You know, do we realize, you know, how much body language plays an effect on others, how tone, how cadence affects others? So I definitely recommend this book. It is called With the Heart in Mind. It's very detailed. You know, he's going over, you know, the language of emotions, body language, physical touch, the art of listening, you know, and he also gets into, topics that, once again, I think are important and we are not talking enough about, but I do understand that it can be a little taboo, such as, you know, how adults parent their children, the concepts of fatherhood. And so I definitely recommend this book. I will be linking a way to purchase and preview the book on YouTube, on Spotify, and Substack. So, Jazakallah khairan. Thank you for listening. And as always, you know, please follow, please share, let others know about this local Louisville Muslim Community podcast. Assalamu alaikum.